The devil doesn't want me to preach this morning. I came back from a visit yesterday afternoon and started back into the sermon notes I'd already mostly prepared for today, and I could not settle, and everything I looked at I thought, what am I trying to say there? What? And there was pages and pages of notes and work. By 7 o'clock last night I abandoned it completely. And I thought, I have to think of something different. Then I got up this morning, and my printer wouldn't work. And having worked down to the wire, and I thought, now what do I do? And had to ask my brother, Phil Taylor, to print my notes off for me. And his colour ink wasn't working, so it's just been days. But we're here, and we've got something to say. And I trust and hope and pray that this is for somebody here. It's Psalm 86, and the title says, A Prayer of David. Psalm 86. Bow down thine ear, O Lord, hear me, for I am poor and needy. Preserve my soul, for I am holy. And certainly where David's concerned, that was not a boast, that was him saying, I'm the anointed one, I'm the king. O thou my God, save thy servant that trusteth in thee. Be merciful unto me, O Lord, for I cry unto thee daily. Rejoice the soul of thy servant, for unto thee, O Lord, do I lift up my soul. For thou, Lord, art good and ready to forgive, and plenteous in mercy unto all them that call upon thee. Give ear, O Lord, unto my prayer, and attend to the voice of my supplications. In the day of my trouble I will call upon thee, for thou wilt answer me. Among the gods there is none like unto thee, O Lord, neither are there any works like unto thy works. All nations whom thou hast made shall come and worship before thee, O Lord, and shall glorify thy name, for thou art great and doest wondrous things. Thou art God alone. Teach me thy way, O Lord. I will walk in thy truth. Unite my heart to fear thy name. I will praise thee, O Lord my God, with all my heart. I will glorify thy name forevermore, for great is thy mercy toward me. Thou hast delivered my soul from the lowest hell. O God, the proud are risen against me, and the assemblies of violent men have sought after my soul, and have not set thee before them. But thou, O Lord, art a God full of compassion, and gracious, long-suffering, and plenteous in mercy and truth. O turn unto me, and have mercy upon me. Give thy strength unto thy servant, and save the son of thine handmaid. Show me a token for good, that they which hate me may see it, and be ashamed, because thou, Lord, hast helped me and comforted me. Amen. And we know the Lord will add his blessing to that reading of his word. David prays. Where is he when he prays? I don't mean where is he geographically, but by that I mean, has he emerged from the trial? And is he writing in retrospect, as is the case with many of his other psalms? Where is he? Well, I can't see any evidence of him being on the other side as I read through Psalm 86. And that makes me think that David's currently going through a tough time at the time of writing. And there's no end in sight. Also, I don't think he's at the beginning of his misery, because he says in verse 3 that he cries unto the Lord day after day, daily, suggesting that he has been seeking the Lord for some time about this particular issue. So he's in a pitiful place when he prays. And that's not all, because he hasn't yet had a word from the Lord. And that seems to be one of the strongest things in the psalm, is that he hasn't yet had a word from the Lord. Here he is going through the mill, and he hasn't yet had a word from the Lord. Verse 1, incline your ears, O Lord, and answer me. Hear me, O Lord, in other words, and answer me. And in verse 7, you will answer me. It doesn't say you have answered me. It's still something future. So David's in this pitiful place when he prays. He hasn't been delivered in spite of his daily petitions, and he still hasn't heard from heaven. To make matters worse, according to the last verse, he hasn't even had a hint that things are going to turn around. He's longing for just some little scrap of evidence that better days are ahead. And that's why he prays in verse 17, show me a token for good. You know, I often pray that, as you know, you've heard me quote, that's where it's from. I often pray that when I'm sitting with folk in need, that the Lord would show them a token for good that day or the next day or soon. Because I know the value of that. And I know that that can turn a situation around, or if it doesn't turn the circumstance, it can turn the person's attitude around who's going through this difficulty. Just a little token for good. And on top of all of that, David's sad. He has a heavy heart. Verse 4 is a plea. Rejoice, the soul of your servant. Wouldn't have to ask that if he was rejoicing. So rejoicing's missing from his life at this time. Gladden the soul of your servant, he's saying. Bring joy to my soul. So that's where David's at as he prays. Does that sound familiar? There's very little in the psalm to help us with regard to details of what might be happening. Certainly there's nothing in the title that would point us in the direction of an event that has taken place. And it makes us ask the question, what kind of trouble is David in? I'm sure he could have filled the page with the things that had happened to him, were happening to him, causing him such distress of heart and mind. But he restricts any such comments just to a few words in verse 14. The proud are risen against me, the assemblies of violent men have sought after my soul and have not set thee before them. That's it. He mentions them again briefly in the last verse. They which hate me. That's it. That's all we know about David's situation and the cause behind his earnest prayer. It's as if he's deliberately concentrating on the Lord and on the Lord's ability to make a difference instead of concentrating on the issues or the people that were wearing him down. And this is where my prayers are often different from David's. Although we do have prayers of David where he does really go for it and mentions all the things that are happening against him. But my prayers are not like this one. They're usually taken up entirely with recounting before the Lord all the things that have happened to me or that others have done to me or the things that are annoying me or disturbing my peace. How many times have I not spent all of my praying time just going over the whole situation word for word, blow for blow, and expecting the Lord to listen while I overanalyze the predicament. I'm sure I'm wearying him because I weary myself. But this is different here in Psalm 86. David isn't concentrating on the issue. And yet he still manages to fill up 17 verses. So what is he concentrating on? Well, verse after verse, David is firmly focused on the Lord. And that helps him to see a couple of important things. First of all, it helps David to see himself not as his enemies see him. Sometimes that's one of the things we do. We go off and we think of what others are thinking or saying, or what others might think or say. We probably don't even know what others are thinking or saying about us. But David isn't concentrating on that. He's interested in how God sees him. And that's why he is very careful in what he says in describing himself. In verse 2 and verse 4 and verse 16, he addresses himself as your servant. He also sees himself as being totally dependent on the Lord. And that's good, because the opposite of that is to appear to be self-sufficient. He says in verse 1, I am poor and needy. Now this is a king. So what he's really saying there is, Lord, I'm your servant. I know where I am in relation to you. Regardless of my royal status, I am your servant. And he says, I am poor and needy. I am trusting. I am depending. I am relying. I am leaning on you, Lord, and not myself. So that's one of the things that David sees as he focuses on the Lord. Another thing that he sees, of course, when self is out of the way, is the Lord himself. In verse 3, verse 5, and verse 13, he sees that the Lord is merciful. He sees that the Lord is good, verse 5. He sees that the Lord is a wonder-working God, verse 8 and verse 10. He sees that the Lord is great, verse 10. He sees that the Lord is a God of truth, verse 11, verse 15. He sees that the Lord is full of compassion, verse 15. He sees that the Lord is ready to forgive, verse 5. He sees that the Lord is gracious and long-suffering, verse 15 again. He sees that the Lord can help, strengthen, and comfort, verses 16 and 17. In fact, as David looks to the Lord for answers, he starts to realize that the Lord is the answer. How often do we ask the Lord for answers to prayer as though he were some kind of wish granter, some kind of dream dispenser, a problem solver? Sort this out, Lord. And when the Lord does intervene in his mercy, and he sends his help, we grab the help and run. Like the greedy child who goes into Santa's grotto, grabs the parcel and makes a dash for the exit, and leaves the old man sitting there, wanting to ask him if he was naughty or nice. Just want it, but not want him. Are we like that? We want the help, but we don't want the helper. It appears from this psalm that when David gets his eyes off himself and his list of woes, then he starts to see how wonderful his Lord really is. In fact, he traces the Lord's hand through his life right back, according to verse 13, great is thy mercy toward me that thou hast. You've already done this, Lord. You've delivered my soul from the lowest hell. Tell me something this morning. Is there anybody here, and clear your throat, I'm expecting an answer, anybody here who's glad the Lord has delivered you from the lowest hell? Isn't that a wonderful thing? David sees that the Lord is merciful. Verses 3, 5, and 13. This is what we read in 1 Peter 1, verse 3. Blessed be the God and Father of our Lord Jesus Christ, which according to his mercy, which according to his abundant mercy has begotten us again into a lively hope by the resurrection of Jesus Christ from the dead. That's what mercy brings. That's what mercy does for us. Way back in the Old Testament, Deuteronomy 4:31. For the Lord your God is a merciful God. He will not leave you or destroy you or forget the covenant with your fathers that he swore to them. He's merciful. Are you saved today? The Lord has been merciful. Are you not saved today? The very fact you're here comes from God's great heart of mercy, that you have another opportunity to trust Jesus. He's merciful. The Lord is good. Verse 5. Psalm 145, the beginning of verse 9. Just a little line, but how true it is. Never doubt this. The Lord is good to all. Now that blows my mind, because when I think of many of the people in this world who've done heinous things. But let me ask you this. As a small sin, any better in the eyes of God than a war crime against thousands? For all have sinned and come short of the glory of God. To offend in one part is to be guilty of all. Are any of us deserving of God's grace? No. And yet, here's this amazing statement. The Lord is good to all. Even that dictator. That dictator has the opportunity of hearing about Jesus and doing something about it, whether he decides to or not. Because the Lord is good to all. Psalm 31 verse 19. Oh, how great is thy goodness, which thou hast laid up for those that fear thee, which thou hast wrought for them that trust in thee. How great is your goodness, Lord. You know, the devil would try to get us to believe that God's not good. And that because of things that have happened to us, how can God be good? God's not being good to me. That's not true. The Lord is good to all. And his goodness is great. It's immeasurable. How great is your goodness, Lord? The Lord is a wonder-working God, verses 8 and verse 10. You remember what the Lord did through Moses when Pharaoh wouldn't let the children of Israel go? We spent some time in the life of Moses, so we know this. And whenever miracle after miracle, plague after plague, was sent to the land of Egypt, Exodus 15:11 states this, ask this question. Who is like unto thee, O Lord, among the gods? Who is like thee, glorious in holiness, fearful in praises, doing wonders? And in Deuteronomy 26:8, the Lord brought us forth out of Egypt with a mighty hand, with an outstretched arm, with great terribleness, with signs, and with wonders. The Lord is a wonder-working God. Do you know he's still working wonders? Were you encouraged last Sunday when Daniel told you about his time in Burkina Faso with the Inupiaq people? Isn't that amazing? And here we are in Northern Ireland seeing so few folk interested in the gospel, so few folk trusting Jesus. And there were people who had never heard, and the darkness they were in. For generations. We've a wonder-working God, haven't we? And the Lord is great. Verse 10. Here's another verse from Jeremiah 10 and 6. There is none like you, O Lord. You are great, and great is your name in might. You're great, and great is your name in might. 1 Chronicles 29:11. Thine, O Lord, is the greatness and the power and the glory and the victory and the majesty. For all that is in heaven and in earth is thine. Thine is the kingdom, O Lord, and thou art exalted head above all. Isn't that a great doxology? Isn't that a great benediction? Thine, O Lord, is the greatness and the power and the glory and the victory and the majesty. For all that is in the heaven and in the earth is thine. Thine is the kingdom, O Lord, and thou art exalted as head above all. No matter how great the leader of a superpower is in this world, he would need to read that verse, isn't that right? The Lord is a God of truth, verses 11 and 15. And Psalm 33 and verse 4 says this, for the word of the Lord is right, and all his works are done in truth. Oh, when you think of the political situation, where's the truth? You go looking for it, it's not there. Awful age of deception that we're living in. But all his works, all of them, are done in truth. Are you glad you're saved? You glad you know one who has the final word, and his prophetic program is still on course, and all his works are done in truth. The Lord is full of compassion. So here we've been thinking about the greatness of his power and of his name and all the works he's done in truth and how mighty he is and all of these grand and things that we can't really get our minds around. But then it comes down to this. Although that is who he is, he is also full of compassion. Verse 15. Here's what we read in that sad book of Lamentations. It is of the Lord's mercies that we are not consumed, because his compassions fail not. They are new every morning. Great is thy faithfulness. His compassions fail not. What was David saying in his prayer there? I cried daily. Well, you see, every time, every day that he prayed again, the Lord's compassions were there to meet him. We mightn't think it. If we're focused on ourselves and on the situation and not on him, we might miss this. But his compassions are new every morning. And the Lord is ready to forgive. Is that in somebody's need today? Saved or unsaved? Is there something? Something needs to be forgiven. Verse 5. 2 Chronicles 7 and 14. You probably could quote this along with me. You've heard it so many times. If my people which are called by my name shall humble themselves and pray, and seek thy face and turn from their wicked ways, then will I hear from heaven and heal the land. There's a bit missing. Forgive their sin and heal their land. See the order? But he's ready to forgive. And he's ready to heal the land. He's ready to do wonders. I wonder what the barrier is. And the Lord is gracious and long-suffering. Verse 15, oh, I'm so glad he's long-suffering with me. Whenever you think about Moses wanting to see the Lord's glory, and the Lord granting him that he would, to a degree, get a glimpse of his glory. And the Lord passed by before him and proclaimed The Lord. The Lord. Merciful, gracious, long-suffering, and abundant in goodness and truth. A lot of these things that we're thinking of, that David lists, that we can pick out of the psalm, there they all are. In that moment when Moses wanted to see a glimpse of God's glory, this is what Moses takes away. A merciful, gracious, long-suffering God, abundant in goodness and truth. See, the minute we step into eternity with Jesus, that's what will impact us. Because we'll see him in all his glory. We'll wonder, how did we ever get here? What am I doing here? And it'll be like Moses getting a glimpse of the glory of the Lord. This is what we'll hear. You're here because he's a God who's gracious and merciful and long-suffering and abundant in goodness and truth. And that's the only reason why. And we have a God who can strengthen and comfort. Isaiah 41 and 10. Fear thou not, for I am with thee. Be not dismayed, for I am thy God. I will strengthen thee, yea, I will help thee. I will uphold thee with the right hand of my righteousness. And this is the God that we should focus our eyes upon when we are in need. And when we are tempted to think that he has forgotten about us. And when we're reaching out to him to hear. And all around us is evidence of who he is and what he wants to say to us. Is it any wonder David says in verse 8, there is no one like you. So with all these facts before him, how does David then actually pray? Well, he prays expecting God to speak to him. Thou wilt answer me. Verse 7. We have a God who speaks. He may not take our problem away. He may not take our sickness away, but he will speak. God speaks, and now he's got David's full attention, hasn't he? And he's beginning to reveal himself to David. And that gives David the confidence to believe that he's going to hear from heaven soon something specific regarding his situation. How does he pray? Well, he, in light of all that he's discovered or rediscovered, he then goes on to ask the Lord to teach him. Teach me thy way, O Lord. Do we have a teachable spirit? Do you remember the Apostle Paul, who, like David, went through something shocking, something terrible, something difficult, and he asked three times, I believe that was three protracted times of prayer, asking the Lord that this thorn in the flesh would be taken from him. And the Lord spoke to him. He didn't take the thorn in the flesh away. He spoke and he said, my grace is sufficient for thee. It's for your good, lest you be exalted above measure. So he hears from the Lord, but he had a teachable spirit. In our prayers, we often suggest the solution to the Lord. In fact, maybe we come and say, Lord, do this. We demand that he do things the way we want them to be done. We're unwilling to accept an alternative. And we keep on praying in that vein, and we're closing our ears to what the Lord really wants us to know, really wants us to understand, and how he then really wants us to lead us on in the way, because we're on a journey and he wants us to progress, but we get stuck if we don't have a teachable spirit. And we need to have a teachable spirit, because how are we then going to know if we're asking amiss? Because he will not hear us if we ask amiss. And we're not going to know that if we're not open to what the Lord would say to us. Ye have not, not because ye ask not, but because ye ask amiss. And as he prays, he asks the Lord to keep him. Verse 2, preserve my soul. 1 Peter 1 and 5, we are kept by the power of God through faith. Unto salvation ready to be revealed at the last time. Jesus said to Simon Peter when he was about to betray him, he said, I have prayed for you. And he asked the Lord to gladden his soul. Have you lost your song today? Ask the Lord to gladden your soul. Psalm 14 verse 3. He hath put a new song in my mouth, even praise unto our God. Isaiah 12. Behold, God is my salvation. I will trust and not be afraid, for the Lord Jehovah is my strength and my song. He also has become my salvation, my deliverer. And David asks for strength. In the light of all these discoveries he's made about the Lord, he goes on then to ask for strength. Give strength to thy servant. Psalm 73. My flesh and my heart faileth, but God is the strength of my heart and my portion forever. Psalm 71:16. I will go in the strength of the Lord. Isaiah 40. He giveth power to the faint and to them that have no might. He increaseth strength. And then he asked the Lord to amaze him. For, he's asked for many things. He says, for thou art great and doest wondrous things. Can you think of how desperate Joseph must have been at times? Falsely accused, imprisoned, rejected by his brother's soul. A whole catalogue of things. Forgotten. But Joseph's God not only amazed him, but amazed all who were watching all. Daniel, remember he was set up. And he couldn't help but fall into the trap because he still wanted to pray to his God. And yet Daniel's God not only amazed Daniel, but amazed all who had anything to do with that, including the king and the throne. Mordecai, we discovered the same thing. He was to be hung on the gallows made by Haman. Haman gets hanged on his own gallows. Mordecai is amazed at the wonders of a wonder-working God. Have you asked the Lord to amaze you? Have you asked the Lord for a token for good? Here's what Jesus says in Matthew 7. If ye then, being evil, know how to give good gifts to your children, how much more shall your Father which is in heaven give good things to them that ask him? Ask him for a token for good today. But don't do that if you haven't gone through the process that we've just been discussing. David's been on a process here. He has opened up his mind to the huge horizon of who God is. And it's on that basis that he dares to then say, show me a token for good. Don't shut the great and mighty and powerful and gracious and long-suffering, forgiving God out of your thoughts as you pray. Get to know him again. And dare to ask. He says, teach me thy way, but that's not the end of it. And I will walk in thy truth. In other words, see all this I've been learning, this process I've been on. I'm going to go on, Lord. Don't be amongst that sad company of believers who have been knocked and knocked hard, but that's it. They're finished. They're nowhere. Teach me, Lord, and I will go on. And may the Lord help us to do that for his name's sake.